My name is Tiffany Doe. I am 16 years old. Today is November 26th, and I'm speaking with Cindy Dye, who is my librarian. We are recording this interview in Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay, what year?
2018.
Okay.
What is one of your happiest memories?
One of my happiest memories is actually about something that happened when I was in college. And it was also something I learned a great deal about. It's kind of a long story, but I'm going to tell it to you. When I was in college, my job was putting away library books. And I was a work-study job, and I spent 20 hours a week putting away books. I started to learn the library pretty well. And because of that, I knew that the Norlin Library at the University of Colorado, where I worked, had some things which were separated out, which had never been converted from the Dewey Decimal System to the Library of Congress classification system. They were down in the basement. There were some children's books, and then there were some other books. But I had been down there, and I knew what they were. So, one year, I decided I wanted to take a course in Western history, the history of the U.S. West. But the course was full, and the computer assigned me to a history of Stuart England instead. So when I got to class, I was disappointed because, of course, I was just a code. But I thought, it doesn't hurt to listen. I sat down, and the teacher walked in, and he put this notebook on the lectern and never looked at it once as he proceeded to tell us all the gossip about Charles I. And then at the end of the class, he handed out a syllabus. He said, you need to keep up with the reading, and these are my office hours, and I'll see you next session. So I thought, well, he was a lot of fun to listen to. I'll go ahead and take this course. Why not? I need a history class. So as we took the course, we had three books to read, and one was a peasant's history of England, one was a constitutional law history of England, one was something else, I forget what the third one was. But they were three different aspects. But we would come in and he would tell us about all the personalities. And I realized as we were going along that this was not a class where we ever had discussions. He didn't tell us what was in the books. We'd read the books. He assumed we'd read them. So there was no chance to show off. You know how you impress a teacher by talking in class or asking questions?
Yeah.
There was really no opportunity to do that. And there weren't any quizzes. All right? So we get to the midterm, and it's a three-hour test. And he says, bring two blue books, which are the little paper booklets that you can write in.
Yeah.
All right? And we come in with our blue books. And he's sitting at the desk, and we all sit down, and once everybody's settled and they've got their pens out, he pulls up the map, and on the blackboard is written, "The English Civil War was inevitable. Why or why not? Use examples from the lectures and the reading." 3 hours, one question.
Yeah.
We were flabbergasted. But I had gone to a high school where we had to write essays every Thursday for 4 years. So I was good at writing essays. So I wrote my midterm, and I had done all the reading. I knew the material. It wasn't easy, but I could do it. So all of a sudden, the 20-page term paper became much more important. All right? Now, the 20-page term paper, he had said, pick a topic. And I picked the rebuilding of London after the Great Fire in 1666. Because I knew the library really well. And I knew we had books about firefighting and the history of firefighting. I knew we had books about the history of London. I knew we had books about some of the people who had lived then, particularly Christopher Wren, who designed a lot of things. So I knew we had books about that. I also knew that down in the basement of those books that had never been put upstairs, we had the guild records of London. Now, the London guilds were like the goldsmiths and the candle makers and, all of these different people. And these were copies of the records that they kept of what had happened in the history of their company. So they had houses. They, you know, if you were a goldsmith, you would have to have, you would be a member of the guild, and they kept these records. Well, these copies were down in the basement, so I knew how much they spent and how long it burned and all of these things. So I was reading along all of this material. I mean, I read a lot, and I wound up with a stack of books at home that came up to, you know, probably 3 feet high. And I stuffed full of bookmarks with things I wanted to quote. I found pictures in the books of the drawings for how far apart buildings were supposed to be and how they were supposed to be designed and what you were supposed to do with your wall so when you rebuilt, the next guy could build next to you. I found pictures of the firefighting apparatuses and maps. And we had a Xerox machine, so I Xeroxed off things. But I had these guild records. And so I created, we had one of the first computers, an Epson QX10. All right. This thing was so cutting edge that it had ASCII, which was not ASCII, it was human ASCII. And it was a word processor, essentially. That's mostly what it could do. But you had one slot to put in the operating system and another slot to put in for your data. So you literally, every time you turned on the computer, you had to load the operating system. This was a really old computer. It was kind of big, too. But I hadn't figured out how to do superscript and subscript yet. So when I went to do my footnotes, I didn't know how to do them on the computer. I knew how to do them on a typewriter, but I didn't know how to do them on a computer. So I asked permission. I got permission to do a numbered bibliography so that I could make my, instead of having the regular footnotes, I could just put in the number of whatever my source was and a slash in the page. So he got permission. I got permission to do that. So I'm sitting at home as this in the last weekend before this thing is due, and I'm typing on the computer, and I've got my bibliography, and I'm pulling out books and saying, okay, it's that page, and finding all my sources and everything, and I've got the Xeroxes of the pages. And at that time, you could get these plastic covers with a little rib that you put down the side, and you stuff the pages in, and then you put the rib down to hold it. So I'm on a computer. I have no idea how many pages long my paper is.
Yeah.
Because I had never used a computer to compose anything that long yet. Mm. So when I printed it out, my bibliography was 20 pages long. The paper was 20 pages long. And then I had all of these Xeroxes of all of the illustrations I'd found that I wanted to share. So when I put it all together, I had three of these little booklet things to turn in. And I got to class, and everybody else is putting down one thing, and it's slender, and I'm like, this is embarrassing. So I hid it under the stack. I hid mine under the stack. And at the end of class, I went to my next class, which was Norwegian. And I was sitting in class, and all of a sudden, my history professor shows up. And he looks around, and he finds me, and he says, "You." And I'm like, you know, just terrified. And my Norwegian teacher says yes, and he looks at Tuta, the Norwegian teacher, and says, "May I borrow her?" And so Tuta said, "Go ahead." So I got up and I went out into the hallway with him, and he had my bibliography in his hand, and he pointed it, and he found the guild records. He said, "Where did you find these?" And I said, "They're in Norland." He said, "Where?" I said, "They're in the basement in Norland." And he said, "Show me." So I took him over to the library, and I took him downstairs to where the guild records were, and he looked at them, and there's these giant calf-bound books. I mean, there's this practically parchment. And he says, "Thank you, may you go back to class." So I go back to class, and I'm like, okay. At least he seems happy about it. But he didn't know they were there. This is his topic. He'd been teaching English history at that school for years. He didn't know that the library had those books. All right. So the upshot of it was I got an A on the paper.
Of course, yeah.
And then at the end of the year, he the final was one question again. But there wasn't a shock at that point. I knew it was going to be one question. I don't remember what the final question was. But he had me stay till the end of the session. He said, "If everybody, before everybody leaves, I have to answer that. Can you pause?" So, coming back to it, at the end of the at the exam, you know, he asked me to stay at the end of the exam because I'd finished up earlier than most of the people. So, I said, "Do you mind if I study for my next final?" He said, "Go ahead." So I sat down and read until everyone had turned in their papers, their blue books, and then went up to the front, and he had my test, and he said, "I want you to know that whatever you wrote in here, you have an A in my class." And he said, "I would have given it to you for the bibliography." And I thought, well, why did I have to take the test? And he said, "I wanted to see what you thought," which is the best compliment I ever got from a teacher. I got an A+ in that class. But what it taught me, and I think one of the things that it, sort of going forward, is that the reason I was able to do so well was I looked very broadly for resources. That I didn't look for a book about the rebuilding of London after the Great Fire. I looked for the things around it. I looked for the people. I looked for the place. I looked for firefighting. I looked for other things that touched on it. I also had been reading steadily. I read these books, you know, like for fun. I stuck in bookmarks, but I didn't try to do all the reading at the end. I did all the writing at the end. But I had been reading, I had been absorbing, I had been understanding the Great Fire for weeks. It was something that was, that's what I was doing. The other side of it that I learned was that even if you have somebody who's kind of an expert in their field, there's chances are there's something that they don't know. This professor, he had been at the school for years, did not know that that resource was there. And I did, because I had worked with the material, because I had been there. So that was important. But the most important part of it was serendipity. And serendipity is a word that means happy happenstance, that something, a happy coincidence, that you find something just out of the blue that was perfect for what you needed. And serendipity is much easier to do in my library shelves than it is on a computer. You know, you do a search in the computer, and you come up with something that is pretty much on the topic that you want, but you don't see the things around the edges, unless the search engine's really bad, and then you're seeing stuff that's like completely unrelated. Because the search engines are set up to a formula that somebody else wrote, where if you go out and you look for information, if you're looking for things, and you look at analog sources, if you look at like library shelves and things, you're going to find stuff around the edges that you didn't know about. I didn't start out thinking I'm going to take a course on Stuart England. I didn't start out thinking I was going to do something about the history of London. And even once I knew I was taking Stuart London, I didn't know I was going to do the Great Fire. But when I was looking for other books on the topic, I saw stuff that was nearby that got me interested. All right. When I was shelving, I saw things. So paying attention and looking for stuff or thinking about what you see gives you a base to begin looking for things that you didn't know anything about. I went into that class not knowing anything about the Great Fire of London, except, well, maybe that it was one of the cities that had a great fire, like Chicago. But I came out of it writing a paper that got me an A+, mostly because I had been around material and I had seen it. So it's serendipity. And as you go through life, there's going to be connections that you can make because you were a person who saw this and saw that. And nobody else is likely to make those connections because they don't have those things that they can put together. Things you can put together are different from everyone else. Sometimes you'll find someone else who put it together, but they maybe didn't put it together the same way you did. I was looking up gasoline from seawater. A few years ago, there was a lot of stuff in the news about gasoline from seawater. And there's a couple of different people who worked on it. But the people who were doing the main work on it were trying to make it economically viable, all right, as gasoline. But they weren't looking at it from where my point of view is. My point of view is that you want to take carbon out of the ocean, all right? To me, the value of gasoline from seawater, once you upscale it large enough, is that we don't have to give up our cars and things right away. It becomes a carbon neutral fuel source. At least gives us time to work on things. But the other side of that, of course, is that you're reducing the amount of carbon in the water, because carbon is acidifying the oceans. So his point of view was, I want to be able to make money from using seawater to make gasoline. And my point of view is, if we're using seawater as a source, we can leave the rest of the carbon in the ground. So those two things, now I hope to, unless I win the lottery, I have no way of doing it. But those two ideas, for me, come together in a way that only a few other people seem to have done. And that is part of the fun of looking at the world and seeing the world and saying, wait a minute, this idea and this idea, what if I put them next to each other? And the more that you do that, the more likely you are to stumble into something that's either really fun or really helpful.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay. So, thinking about future generations and knowing that they may hear this recording, is there wisdom or advice you would like to share with them?
I kind of just did. Yeah. Mostly it's keep your eyes open,
yeah.
Keep your mind open. And think about how the stuff you learn connects to each other. Think about the connections, because those are what really, in the end, make the difference. Learning a bunch of facts doesn't do you any good. Putting those facts together and analyzing them, that does. So, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.